last installment of tonight's probably last installment of Radio Free America 36. There is one more article that I may go into next week. In fact, as I think about it, probably will go into it to a certain extent, so we will do a little more next week by way of wrap-up. But this is the last major installment. Now, what we've been looking at this evening is Western and American support in particular for resurgent fascist elements in Eastern Europe. We've taken a look at the collaborationist Linke Party, which has evolved to a certain extent into the Slovak World Congress, an organization, unfortunately, with some links to Václav Havel in Czechoslovakia. We've taken a look at the Romanian Iron Guard, elements of which have evolved into the National Christian Peasants Party. We've taken a look at the Arrow Cross, the Hungarian fascist organization. We've taken a look in past installments at Ukrainian fascists, Lithuanian fascists, to a certain extent Latvian fascists this evening. And it should be borne in mind that many of these elements are linked by, as I said, the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, previously the Galen Spy Organization, and in a political activist sense, the Free Congress Foundation and its sponsor, the National Endowment for Democracy, which also, as we looked at in the first installment, had been very active in supporting the LCRA and LIC vehicles for the reintroduction of fascism into Lithuania and the Sąjūdis Party in particular. We're now going to take a look at what is going on in Yugoslavia. And it should be noted that Yugoslavia is also a socialist country, although it broke with the Soviet Union in the immediate aftermath of World War II. It has, though, as a socialist country, been a consistent target for U.S. and Western destabilization. And Yugoslavia, in particular, is very vulnerable to destabilization because, like the Soviet Union, there are many diverse nationalities in Yugoslavia, although it's much smaller, of course. And like the Soviet Union, these nationalities have a number of fierce and long-standing rivalries and bitternesses. It should be noted again that, as I said earlier in the broadcast, just as is the case with the Soviet Union, these bitternesses, these rivalries, certainly transcend and predate the Second World War and the Cold War. They predate the rise of socialism or Marxism, and one should avoid making the mistake of oversimplifying these ethnic clashes into simply a manifestation of the Cold War. At the same time, it has been a major focus of U.S. intelligence activity in the post-World War II period to destabilize nations, not just in Europe but elsewhere, by promoting traditional hostilities between various ethnic groups within the targeted nation. There is very firm evidence that Western activity is involved with the current problems in Yugoslavia, and I'm not going to even attempt to cover all of the different ethnic problems in Yugoslavia or analyze the problems of Yugoslavia as a whole and the failures of its government. Undoubtedly, there have been many failures by Tito and then his successors, Marshal Tito, the leader of the Yugoslavian Communist Party, who gained control during the Second World War as a result of the heroic struggle of the Yugoslavian partisans in resisting the Nazis. He then came to power, and just as the Soviets have done, undoubtedly made many mistakes and many serious ones. However, it is to be noted, too, that the problems those countries have endured have also been greatly exacerbated not only by the Cold War and the huge defense spending that that has necessitated, but also by active destabilization by fascist elements working for Western intelligence. And because the focus of this broadcast is the U.S. national security establishment and its connections with international fascism, that is the element of this that I am focusing on in the program. The activities of Western-supported elements are obviously very important, although not the by any means the only thing that is going on in both the problems of the Soviet Union and elsewhere in Eastern Europe. However, that is the element of it that I am looking at in this broadcast, and it should be noted that just as the role of Western intelligence support for fascism in these countries' problems should not be exaggerated, it should not be underestimated, which tragically it tends to be, even by so-called progressive observers. Now, in Yugoslavia at the moment, there is a tremendous amount of hostility between the different republics of Yugoslavia, and in particular, there is renewed bitterness between the Serbs and the Croats, two of the major nationalities in Yugoslavia. Two of the major six republics are Serbia and Croatia, and it should be noted that the history of bitterness between the Serbs and the Croats, although it predates the Cold War and World War II, it reached reached a peak during that period when independent Croatia, the fascist puppet state of Croatia, conducted a brutal, brutal campaign against Serbs as well as Jews and communists, and that is something we're going to be looking at in the broadcast this evening. And in particular, we're going to take a look at the Ustashi and the support of Western intelligence and other elements of our national security establishment and the Vatican for the Ustashi and their continued activities to this day. The Ustashi also represent a very important element of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. Rereading a short section from the article that we read earlier, Balkan Nationalists Peddling Fascism, by Howard Goldenthal and Russ Ballant, by way of easing into our discussion of Yugoslavia, the destabilization of Yugoslavia, and the fascist Ustashi presence in that destabilization. Another Nazi collaborator and separatist who came back from the West looking for a state was Ivo Omerkanin, and again, I'm not sure about the pronunciation, O-M-R-C-A-N-I-N, an official during the war with the Foreign Ministry of the State of Independent Croatia. After the war, Omerkanin helped other Nazis, including Ustasha President Ante Pavelic, P-A-V-E-L-I-C, and Klaus Barbie, escape to Latin America. While in the U.S., Omerkanin took part in events sponsored by the quasi-Nazi Institute for Historical Review. In an interview with the Yugoslav magazine ST, Omerkanin said he had returned to Croatia to register a new political party. He blamed Jews for massacres against Croatians during the war. He claimed Jasenovac's, a concentration camp set up to handle Jews and Serbs, was a Hollywood production. Quote, "You can see how big of an imagination these Jews have when they make cartoons. Those are all made by Jews," unquote. Well, it would appear that Ivo Omerkanin is not alone in his Ustashi and pro-fascist and anti-Semitic views. He has plenty of company in Croatia, and the activities of people like him are one of the factors exacerbating the ethnic bitterness in Yugoslavia today. Reading a short section from the San Jose Mercury News from Sunday, March 17th of 1991, this is an article by Carol J. Williams of the Los Angeles Times. It's headlined, "Serbia and Croatia on the Verge of War," state-lined Belgrade, Yugoslavia, and it reads in part as follows. Yugoslavia's largest republics moved onto a war footing Saturday with Serbia and Croatia mobilizing police and reservists in the wake of a federal leadership crisis that has heightened the likelihood of a military coup. Those tensions, at least for the time being, have cooled somewhat, but when you see Serbia and Croatia on a war footing, quote-unquote, it should, for a student of Eastern European history and the Second World War and fascism in particular, bring back a familiar, albeit very terrible and depressing recognition, namely a resurgence and a revival of the conflict between the Serbs and the Croats, which was the central element in the brutal Ustashi regime during the Second World War. Reading now from the New York Times of Monday, March 4th of 1991, this is an article by Stephen Engelberg, E-N-G-E-L-B-E-R-G, dateline Pakrac, Yugoslavia, or Pakrac, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, P-A-K-R-A-C. It's headlined, "Serb-Croat Showdown in One Village Square," and it reads in part as follows. The enmity between Serbs and Croats, who make up the largest of Yugoslavia's six republics, has deep roots. About 30 miles from Pakrac, at the Jasenovac concentration camp, tens of thousands of Serbs, Gypsies, and Jews were killed when it was run by the fascist puppet government of Croatia during World War II. For the Serbs, the memory of the wartime atrocity is long. Jovan Miljanic, M-I-L-J-A-N-I-C, a 70-year-old retired road worker, stood with a group of Serbian men on the outskirts of Pakrac today and declared, quote, "If the Croatian police does not withdraw, there will be victims. The Croatians killed people, stuffed them down wells. People still remember this. They get frightened when they see the same insignia that they saw in the war years," unquote. By the way, it should be noted, too, that the Croatian militia, the Croatian police, have to show a pure Croatian heritage going back several generations, and they prevented a Serbian march to commemorate the slaughter of Serbs at Jasenovac. Rereading this last couple of sentences, quoting this fellow, Jovan Miljanic, M-I-L-J-A-N-I-C, Miljanic. "If the Croatian police does not withdraw, there will be victims. The Croatians killed people and stuffed them down wells. People still remember this. They get frightened when they see the same insignia that they saw in the war years. And that insignia, of course, is the Ustashi insignia. And just exactly why that is so terrifying to people from Serbia, well, we're now going to recount some of that history, and I think it'll become only too clear what those people are afraid of and why the memories are long and bitter. We're going to review now, we're going to illuminate the history of the Ustashi, the brutal Croatian fascists who collaborated and even outdid the Nazis in their ferocity during World War II. We're going to take a look at a section of a book called Wanted, The Search for Nazis in America. It's authored by Howard Bloom, B-L-U-M, published in hardcover edition by Quadrangle Books, copyright 1977. And in this book, there's a chapter about Andrija Artukovic, the Ustashi Minister of the Interior, who was nicknamed the Himmler of the Balkans and who oversaw the brutal campaign against the Serbs and Jews and Gypsies in fascist Croatia during the Second World War. This man's name, by the way, is Andrija Artukovic, spelled A-N-D-R-I-J-A, A-R-T-U-K-O-V-I-C. And of Artukovic, Jasenovac, the brutal concentration camp he set up, and the atrocities committed by the Ustashi, the ones that rightly terrify the people of Serbia, Bloom writes as follows. Andrija Artukovic was a guest of the German government at the Hotel Kaiserhof in Berlin when Enterprise 25 took place. Enterprise 25, the code name for Hitler's order to his high command to destroy Yugoslavia, quote, both militarily and as a state, unquote, began minutes before 7 a.m. on April 6, 1941. On that morning, Luftwaffe planes bombed Belgrade while German troops, along with their Italian, Bulgarian, and Hungarian allies, crossed Yugoslav borders. Within 4 days, German forces occupied Zagreb and were pushing south. A telegram sent by Pavelic in Rome to Hitler, that, by the way, is Ante Pavelic, the Poglavnik, who was the head of state of wartime fascist Croatia. Repeating once again, a telegram sent by Pavelic in Rome to Hitler rejoiced, quote, at the moment of the entry of the glorious and invincible German troops into my homeland, I take the liberty, Führer, of conveying to you my gratitude and devotion. Independent Croatia will tie her future to the new order in Europe, which you, Führer, and the Duce have created, unquote. On April 17, 1941, the Yugoslav army surrendered. The union which one world war had created was now destroyed by another. Interrupting, Yugoslavia was put together at the end of World War I. It previously and its member republics had been part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire. It's worth noting here that Pavelic, by way of digression, Pavelic, perhaps not actually, talks about the new order in Europe. We're now hearing George Bush, himself allied with many of these same elements, talking about the new world order. That was Hitler's phrase, precisely. It's also worth noting here that the Enterprise 25 was to destroy Yugoslavia both militarily and as a state. And it's worth speculating about the extent to which we are now furthering Enterprise 25 on behalf of Hitler. Continuing here with the description of what happened in Yugoslavia in general and wartime Croatia in particular. The Nazis supervised the partitioning of the country. The Italians were given most of the Dalmatian coast, Hungary and Bulgaria grabbed other pieces of the spoils, while the Nazis kept old Serbia with its capital of Zagreb for their own rule. Croatia, though, became an independent state, an Ustashi state designed and ultimately controlled by the Nazis. By the way, Ustashi is U-capital-U-S-T-A-S-H-I. You'll also hear it called Ustasha. And that is the name. It means warrior in Croatian. That is the name of the Croatian fascist organization. 5 days after the proclamation of the independent state of Croatia, Pavelic and Artukovic, accompanied by German and Italian troops, led a contingent of 200 armed and uniformed Ustashi soldiers through the streets of Zagreb. They had returned, finally triumphant, to take control. Immediately, a Nazi-sponsored cabinet was announced. Pavelic, as chief of state, and as his number two man, the interior minister Andrija Artukovic. The decade of exile was finally over. For years, power had been the obsession. Now an independent Croatia realized a new, more terrible obsession would take its place, the complete and permanent institutionalization of this power. The ferocious brutality that powerless exile had masked, Ustashi rule would quickly expose. During the first summer alone, an estimated 180,000 Serbs, Jews, and Gypsies would be slaughtered. The man directing this genocide was Andrija Artukovic. It was Artukovich who on April 30, 1941, signed the Decrees of Racial Affiliation, unquote, which defined the term Jew. Artukovich's Croatian adaptation of the Nazi racial law was even more stringent than its model. Another series of anti-Jewish laws, all based on the Nazi Nuremberg decrees, quickly followed. The nationalization of Jewish property and business, the prohibition of intermarriage, the prohibition of employing female Aryan servants under 45, the establishment of racial origin for members of the state bureaucracy and the professions, and the racial identity law, which required that, quote, persons of the Jewish race over the age of 14 must wear signs identifying themselves as Jews in the form of a round tin plate when outside their homes. This sign must be worn so that it can be seen on the left side of the breast. Each of these decrees was signed by Interior Minister Andrija Artukovich. But legislation was not a sufficient solution to the Jewish question, quote-unquote. The decisive and healthy grasp, quote-unquote, which Artukovich boasted about to the Sabor, that's the Croatian parliament, came in the form of decree, and it's in Roman numerals, I'm not even going to attempt to cover this, came in the form of a decree. This law, signed by Artukovich, legalized the establishment of 20 concentration camps. The camps were directly controlled by Artukovich. It was the intelligence service, security service, and Ustashi police unit, specifically under the command of the Minister of the Interior, which organized the mass arrests and supervised the exterminations. Jasenovac, a former brickyard, was transformed under the personal direction of Artukovich into the largest Croatian extermination camp. Artukovich, working with the assistance of Adolf Eichmann, supervised the conversion of the brick kilns into ovens where thousands of Serbs and Jews were burned alive. Death at these camps, though, was not just by anonymous fire. The Ustashi, even more so than the Gestapo, demanded a more personal involvement in their evil. The Ustashi murderers killed their victims with an atavistic passion. Throat slashings, eye gougings, tongue extractions, axe decapitations, and disembowelments all were common ways of death for enemies of the state. The Ustashi seemed to lust after barbarism, personally challenging each other to respond more wildly to Pavlich's call to blood, quote-unquote. At Jasenovac's, contests were conducted to see which Ustashi could execute the fastest with his graviso, G-R-A-V-I-S-O, a long, curved-bladed knife. Petar Brzica, B-R-Z-I-C-A, was the champion. His graviso cut through 1,300 throats in a single night. For nearly 4 years, the killings continued. Artukovich's executioners hunted in the towns and cities of Croatia for those he had labeled, quote, the poisonous damagers and insatiable parasites, unquote. His men were very effective. Over 300,000 Yugoslavs were victims of the Ustashi, and despite all the killings, Artukovich personally demanded more excess. It was Artukovich, according to Yugoslav documents, who ordered Chief of Police Franjo Truhar, T-R-U-H-A-R, to, quote, kill all the Serbs and Jews without exception, unquote. It was Artukovich who warned the mayor of Serin, C-E-R-I-N, quote, if you can't kill Serbs or Jews, you are an enemy of the state, unquote. It was Artukovich who scolded Simon Buntic, B-U-N-T-I-C, for killing only two Serbs. Quote, you should not have come to me at all if you have not killed 200 Serbs. So, obviously, the people of Serbia are to be understood when they have long memories about the brutalities of the Ustashi. But eventually, like all good things, the independent state of Croatia, at least for the time being, came to an end, continuing with Blum's account. But as the Reich crumbled, so did the independent state of Croatia. On May 4, 1945, the German troops pulled out of Croatia, and the Ustashi followed. For Pavlich and Artukovich, the years on the run began once more. They changed into civilian clothes, and under the protection of the retreating Nazis, managed to reach Austria. Well, we're going to take a look now at the post-war career of the Ustashi, although the independent state of Croatia, at least for the time being, remains a goal and not one to be actualized, although Croatia is moving towards independence right now. The fact of the matter is the Ustashi remained very much together and very active under the auspices of organizations like the Galen Organization and also the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations and the World Anti-Communist League. That league, again, has been renamed the World League for Freedom and Democracy. If there's anything they're not concerned with, it's freedom and democracy. A very good book about the World Anti-Communist League came out a few years ago. It's called Inside the League, subheaded The Shocking Exposé of How Terrorists, Nazis, and Latin American Death Squads Have Infiltrated the World Anti-Communist League. It's co-authored by Scott Anderson and John Lee Anderson, published in hardcover by Dodd, Mead & Company, and copyrighted 1986. The subhead here, the subtitle is a little ridiculous. The Shocking Exposé of How Terrorists, Nazis, and Latin American Death Squads Have Infiltrated the World Anti-Communist League. That's a little like saying The Shocking Exposé of How Terrorists and Nazis Have Infiltrated the Gestapo. I mean, it's basically what the organization was put together for, and it's remained true to its creed. Now, of the post-war continuation of the Ustashi, John Lee and Scott Anderson write as follows in Inside the League. Perhaps no other European fascist group escaped quite as intact as the Croatian Ustasha. Although thousands of lesser officials and soldiers were captured either by the Soviet army or Tito's partisans, and almost always summarily executed, virtually the entire leadership escaped. Responsible for the slaughter of a million of their countrymen, the Ustashi were able to elude justice through a combination of Allied incompetence, Vatican complicity, the chaos of post-war Europe, the mutual suspicions of the United States and the Soviet Union, the generous assistance of the Argentine and Spanish governments, and the solidarity of Croatian émigrés in every part of the world. Skipping down. Portraying themselves as victims of communist persecution whose only crimes, quote-unquote, were to be Croatian patriots, the Ustashi quickly set up front groups in their exile communities. In 1956, Pavelić founded the Croatian Liberation Movement, or HOP, with its headquarters and its Supreme Council in Buenos Aires. Stepan Hefer, H-E-F-E-R, the loyal henchman, was named to the Supreme Council. In exile, Hefer made no attempt to hide his allegiance to the Ustasha cause or his bitterness at the United States and Great Britain for having failed to accept the Croatians as allies. I would interrupt. That bitterness, at least against the United States, should have faded at this point. Continuing. The great Western powers preferred to fight against the idea of nationalism because of their own selfish reasons. The Western democratic powers also accepted the propaganda of Tito and the Yugoslav communists and proclaimed Croatian nationalism and Croatian revolutionary struggle for freedom under the leadership of the Croatian Ustasha movement as Nazi fascism, unquote. After rival Croatians attempted to assassinate Pavelić the following year, the Poglavnik sought refuge in Spain. That's P-O-G-L-A-V-N-I-K, that's his formal title. He lived quietly and reclusively in Madrid until his death from natural causes in December of 1959. He is buried in a secret cemetery outside Madrid. On Pavlich's death, the leadership of the HOP passed to Stepan Hefer. Other factions appeared, each claiming to be the true inheritor of the Ustasha creed. Some were more than willing to display their adherence to Pavlich's teachings by acts of terror. One, the Croatian Revolutionary Brotherhood, a hit squad formed in Australia in 1961, is composed mainly of second-generation Croatians who have maintained close ties with the old Ustasha network. One more time, because we're going to take a look at a second-generation Croatian Ustasha in a second. One, the Croatian Revolutionary Brotherhood, a hit squad formed in Australia in 1961, is composed mainly of second-generation Croatians who have maintained close ties with the old Ustasha network. Skipping down once again. The Ustashi continue to have a great deal of strength within Croatian emigre communities throughout the world, including in the United States. They now portray themselves as Democrats, quote-unquote, and again quoting, in harmony with the American tradition of freedom and independence, unquote. But such Croatian newspapers as Danica, D-A-N-I-C-A, and Nasat Nada, N-A-S-A-N-A-D-A, the latter the official newspaper of the Croatian Catholic Union of the United States, continue to pay reverence to their fallen Poglavnik and his Ustasha cause. The Ustashi have managed to get their voices and demands heard not only through acts of terrorism, but also through the forum of international organizations like the World Anti-Communist League. After the death of Hefer in 1973, his place as head of the Croatian chapter of the League was taken by Anton Bonifacic, B-O-N-I-F-A-C-I-C, another former Ustasha official living in Chicago. As president of the fallen Pavlich's Croatian Liberation Movement, Bonifacic now represents Croatia at League conferences, giving speeches and passing resolutions on the continuing struggle for the independent state of Croatia, liberally rewriting history in doing so. Whereas the Croatian nation, quoting here, whereas this is from a speech here given by Bonifacic. And bear in mind, of course, the World Anti-Communist League was a major, not only a source of ideological inspiration for the Reagan and Bush administrations, but also a major organ of foreign policy. John Singlob and the World Anti-Communist League were heavily involved with supporting the Contras in Nicaragua. Returning here to Bonifacic and his misrepresentation of Croatian history, whereas the Croatian nation was subject to the unprecedented genocide in which massacre of about 1 million Croatians were slaughtered by communists or Serbs who were opposed to the Croatian self-determination and national independence. Of course, this is interrupting here. This is a 180-degree reversal of the facts. It was the Croatians, as we've seen, who did the slaughtering of the Serbs and communist Jews and gypsies. Continuing, or reviewing here, whereas the Croatian nation was subjected to the unprecedented genocide in which massacre of about 1 million Croatians were slaughtered by communists or Serbs who were opposed to the Croatian self-determination and national independence. Therefore, the 11th Conference of the WACL resolves to declare that the Socialist Federal Republic of Yugoslavia, this artificial creation of Versailles and Yalta, should be substituted by free, independent, and democratic states, unquote. This is a WACL resolution, obviously aiming at breaking up Yugoslavia, which appears to be going on right now. Continuing, interestingly, Taiwan, the chief sponsor of the WACL, is one of only two nations in the world to recognize the Croatian Liberation Movement as a legitimate government in exile. The extent to which the Ustashi have been able to influence world opinion and portray reports of their past crimes as nothing more than communist propaganda is perhaps best illustrated by the machinations over April 10th, 1941. Take note of this because this is very important. April 10th, 1941 was the day the Germans invaded Yugoslavia and established the Ustasha regime. Today, among both the old Ustashi and the new, April 10th is known as Croatian Independence Day. To Yugoslavians, especially Serbs and Jews, it is remembered as the day their Holocaust began. During his tenure as governor of California, Ronald Reagan passed a resolution recognizing the date as Independent Croatia Day as a favor to his Croatian constituents. One more time, during his tenure as governor of California, Ronald Reagan passed a resolution recognizing the date as Independent Croatia Day as a favor to his Croatian constituents. He later rescinded the proclamation and apologized to the Yugoslav government when informed of the true significance of April 10th. A simple, if embarrassing, mistake, but others haven't picked up the cue. In a pamphlet put out by the National Republican Heritage Groups Council, a branch of the Republican Party, entitled 1984 Guide to Nationality Observances, unquote, there is this heading under April 10th, Croatian Independence Day. The independent state of Croatia was declared by unanimous proclamation in 1941, thus ending an enforced union with royalist Yugoslavia in which Croatian independence was subverted and threatened. Lack of Western support and Axis occupation forced the new state into an unfortunate association with the Axis powers. The Ustasha historical the Ustasha historical revisionists could not have said it any better. Now, again, April 10th is the date on which Croatia became independent as the fascist puppet state of the Nazis, and it also was the date on which Artukovic and Pavlic began their slaughter, which we have already heard described in Wanted, the Search for Nazis in America. It should be noted that not only Ronald Reagan, but the National Republican Heritage Groups Council have basically, at least Reagan for a time, and the National Republican Heritage Groups Council still carried on the mythology of the April 10th holiday. We're now going to take a look at something which falls quite close to home. By way of taking a look at the link between the Croatian fascists and their supporters in the United States and the Croatian fascists and the separatists in Yugoslavia today, the ones who are helping to promote the friction with Serbia, I'm going to play you a section of a broadcast that was featured on sister station KKUP-FM on April 6th of 1989. For many years, KKUP had a program called the Croatian Radio Hour. This was hosted by the person you're going to hear speaking in just a minute. His name is Ante Yakovchevich, spelled J-A-K-O-V-C-E-R-V-I-C. And on April 6, 1989, he held forth about the April 10th holiday and misrepresented history about as fundamentally as Bonifacic did in this the section of Inside the League that we heard, and as the Republican National Heritage Groups Council and for a time Ronald Reagan did as well. This particular individual obviously is of Ustashi sympathies, and it is to be noted that after he left the United States, he was dismissed from KKUP as a result of having made this broadcast, a process I was able to assist KKUP General Manager Al Kalame in doing. It should be noted that he went back to Croatia, and he is now, according to a reliable source, functioning in an official capacity for the new independence-minded government of Croatia. I'm not sure whether he's an official, a civilian official, or functionary of some kind, or bureaucrat, or whether he's a member of the Croatian militia who have to prove a Croatian heritage going back several generations. But this fellow, Ante Jakovčević, who you're about to hear, is now functioning in Croatia on an official capacity for the Croatian government there. Now, again, this program, which you're about to hear, is a section of a broadcast of the Croatian Radio Hour. It was aired on KKUP-FM on April 6th of 1989, and for those people who eventually hear this program by tape and in other areas, KKUP-FM is a licensed, non-commercial, listener-sponsored radio station that is a member of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters, and it is a nice liberal, at least in theory, radio station. Most of the people there are liberals. I myself broadcast on that station. But it's worth noting just how easy it is for fascist elements to infiltrate a progressive organization and to maintain an influence there. Of course, people do not know what the Ustashi are. You talk to most Americans and you ask them what an Ustashi is, they're going to say, well, is that like a Watusi or is it more like a Jacuzzi? They've never heard of it. But the fact of the matter is that ignorance permits people like Ante Jakovčević to operate in the way that he was able to do so successfully for many years. Again, the following broadcast was aired on KKUP-FM on April 6th. Of 1989.
And we got another call from Jan Bakotic, and he asked us what we know about coming event in the Croatian church on the Sunday. He received a flyer, and what is about that? So, and coming Sunday, it's not a church celebration, it's a celebration by Međudruštveni odbor Sjeverne Kalifornije. And this will be April 10th, which is a day when was established independent state of Croatia. And I will give a little more history later, but to answer question to Mr. Jan, it's going to be mass and will be program after that with group Knez Branimir and Tamburica Kral Tomislav, and for dancing we'll play with Dubrovnik. So that's about this group that are organized, are all groups, political groups together that celebrate that political date that was independent state of Croatia. And 1918 was established first Yugoslavia, and then after that, in that period, was Kingdom of Slovenia, Croatia, and Serbia. And of course, during that period, was people there were not happy with that situation in Yugoslavia. Was not freedom. Was not national freedom for anybody who was not Serbian. And because was in general Serbians in power, so what was people at that call history as control Serbian hegemony. That's what call if you ask Slovenian and Croatians about that. So when Germany was invited Yugoslavia was capitulate in and break in 6-7 days, and that time was a form independent state of Croatia, and also in another Croatia before that was in Austro-Hungary monarchy for many years, and before 1918 was in Austro-Hungary monarchy, and then when Austro-Hungary monarchy was break, then was established that first Yugoslavia and Kingdom of Slovene, Croatians and Serbians, but King was a Serbian king, and so of course he was ruling in his way. So then when Germany was invited at that first Yugoslavia, then Yugoslavia break in the part and was independent state of Croatia was established. And that state was for 4 years. And then during that period was another part of people that got together and they were fighting against this state. And so Croatian people were split in two. One were defending this state of Croatia, and another were fighting with communists for another Yugoslavia with President Tito. And so that was, after 4 years, was established second Yugoslavia with President Tito. And so people and organization, political organization, who support independent state of Croatia, then celebrate this date. And so that's what is Mr. Jan all about. So if anybody has any other questions, even our political, we don't mind. This is free country, we can speak and we can talk about. And if anybody has anything to ask, we will willing to answer whatever we know. So call us at 253-6000, 253-6000. So we will try to answer on this Croatian radio program, 91.5 FM in Cupertino, KKUP station.
Yeah, well, he was there for a while. He's not there anymore, as I say, as a result, direct result of that broadcast. He was ousted from KKUP, a process I'm proud to say I was able to assist in considerably. Unfortunately, KKUP's gain was Croatia's loss. He is now, as I said, back in Croatia, functioning in an official capacity for the new Croatian separatist-minded government there. And note again the fundamental misrepresentation of history that the Ustashi have been so successful in creating and perpetuating, that they themselves were the victims. Certainly there have been all kinds of hostilities and discriminations back and forth for centuries in the Balkans and Yugoslavia in particular, but they were not the victims of persecution. They were the persecutors and active and brutal collaborators of the Nazis, as we looked at in the horrifying description of the slaughter conducted by the Ustashi. And it's worth noting the fundamental distortions of history that this fellow was talking about, how Germany was invited into Yugoslavia. Well, of course, Germany was not invited into Yugoslavia any more than they were invited into any of the other places they wound up. And it's worth noting, though, that these people are very much with us today. They did not disappear, unfortunately. And as author William Faulkner noted in one of my favorite quotes, Faulkner noted that, quote, "The past is never dead and buried. It isn't even past." And it's worth noting again the continuity between what goes on in America here and what is now going on in Eastern Europe by way of the destabilization. This fellow, Ante Yakovchevich, is functioning in Eastern Europe. I'm not sure whether he's a bureaucrat or a political official or a member of the Croatian militia, but he's there and he's doing his thing. I guess he was invited into Croatia, just like the Germans were invited into Yugoslavia in 1941. That concludes this archive show. I think that I'll read one more article by way of conclusion next week to wind up Radio Free America 36. This concludes the prepared portion of tonight's broadcast.